From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. The Great Salt Lake is drying out. The lake reached record lows this year, and Utah lawmakers are scrambling for solutions. One key factor will be preserving the largest river that feeds the lake. And as the Mountain West News Bureau's Will Walkie reports, solutions, they are not easy to find.
I'm standing on a dam at a migratory bird refuge in northern Utah. Here, the 500-mile Bear River meets the Great Salt Lake. Mosquitoes and wasps are swarming my microphone, so it's not my favorite spot. But for birds like the Wilson's phalarope, this is a critical fuel stop on their journey from western Canada to Argentina.
They usually have to double their weight when they're here so they can make it to South America on a nonstop flight, which is a pretty incredible journey.
That's John Luft with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources. He says that for 10 million plus migratory birds, a shrinking lake puts their habitat under threat. The lake's surface covered more than 3,000 square miles in the 1980s. Today, that number is less than 1,000. That's something even national news is increasingly concerned about.
Now to what some tonight are calling a looming environmental nuclear bomb in Utah.
Officials now sounding the alarm about climate change and the worsening drought, pushing it to the brink of an ecological crisis.
The consequences of a dried up Great Salt Lake affect more than just birds. It threatens Utah's brine shrimp and mining industries. And toxic remnants of an industrial past could be kicked up into the air in dust storms. Joel Ferry is a fifth generation Utah rancher and farmer. He says residents are starting to get concerned about the issue.
And we have to recognize that it's not an unlimited resource.
Ferry was appointed by the governor to help manage the state's natural resources, and he says one key to reversing trends on the Great Salt Lake is preserving more water from the rivers that feed it, like the Bear River. The Bear runs through three states and supplies more than half the water flowing into the lake.
The Bear River is the key to saving Great Salt Lake, and that's where our focus should be.
But the river's watershed has had below-average precipitation four of the past 5 years. It also faces a lot of pressure from people who depend on it and from climate change. Adrian Hunolt is a Wyoming rancher near the river's headwaters.
So it seems like we're at the extremes up here now. So we'll have like an extremely low snow year, and then we'll have a tremendous snow year.
Hunolt lives at 7,800 feet, mostly among windswept sagebrush fields. He only has a 60-day growing season, made possible because he diverts water from the Bear River to his hayfield. Hundreds of landowners in Wyoming, Idaho, and Utah do the same thing.
And so what I need to be able to do is bank grass during the summer so that I can use it in the fall and winter. So for example, where these cows and horses are right here, we've basically been irrigating these meadows here all summer.
The water eventually gets filtered back into the river, and Hunolt's wetlands create habitat for birds, moose, and beaver. But farming in the sensitive watershed is controversial. A Utah State University study found that agriculture makes up almost two-thirds of the water diverted for human use in the Great Salt Lake watershed. Hunolt points to development downstream as the problem.
I don't feel like things have really changed that much up here at this spot in the valley in the last 150 years. But the Great Salt Lake's continued to dry up, so I would have a hard time finding how we're contributing to that.
Utah legislators passed a number of laws this year trying to get landowners to use less water. The governor also put a hold on new water rights, and the state may even pay farmers not to grow crops like alfalfa. Joel Ferry says agriculture is willing to do its part to conserve.
I mean, I see it in my own life. I see it in my neighbors. There's an inherent desire to make your farm better, to be more productive, to be sustainable.
What might not be sustainable, though, is projected growth in Utah. 2.2 million people in the next 4 decades, and the state may divert more from the Bear River for this population. With so many competing interests, compromises are going to be hard to find. The question is, can local legislators and residents figure out a fair plan to save the Great Salt Lake before it's too late? For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Will Walkie.
And along with the Great Salt Lake, the Colorado River is also drying up. Communities that rely on the river are already filling that pinch. Many large cities throughout the Southwest are well positioned to weather the coming crisis. But for some small towns like Page, Arizona, the threat of losing their water supply completely is no longer hypothetical. KUNC's Alex Hager reports.
Tobin Pilot walks across a crunchy patch of red dirt and pulls out his keys.
come in here too often. It's just guessing which key it is. Hey, first try.
Pilot is with the City of Pages Water Department, and he's opening the door to a tiny wood-paneled shed. We're on the edge of a cliff, standing on dusty desert rock that towers above the Colorado River.
This is the town's water, comes right through this shack. Crazy to think.
This shed is tiny, but important. Here, water comes up from the river hundreds of feet below and enters the pipes that feed the homes, hotels, and restaurants in this tourist town.
What it does is there's a pipeline that is bored through the cliff of Glen Canyon, and then as it comes to the edge just past us here and goes straight up and then into another pipeline that goes up to our water plant.
But that system is under threat. Page gets its water from Lake Powell, the nation's second largest reservoir. It's held back by the Glen Canyon Dam, a 700-foot-tall behemoth. And inside the dam, there's a pipe that sucks water up to the little shed and onto the city. But drought and steady demand have drained the reservoir to a near-record low, putting Page's drinking water system in jeopardy.
They never anticipated the lake actually dropping down to a level where they weren't going to be able to generate, or where Page was going to struggle to get water.
Brian Hill is the city's utility manager.
That just simply wasn't anticipated. That's why we're scrambling to make a design mod down there now.
He's talking about reworking the pipes inside the dam. If the river drops below the current intake, it would flow through a backup, even lower down. In the dam, a team of welders is working on new pipes to link that backup to Page. But Hill says Page won't have peace of mind without more upgrades. If the system in the dam fails for any reason, water stops flowing from city taps. What they need, he says, is a second straw, a little further upstream, that would provide redundancy. But that won't come cheap.
It's roughly a $46 million project, and as you can imagine, you're not going to get that kind of money out of 3,500 water customers. That's just not going to happen.
Hill gets that cost estimate from a 2004 study from the Bureau of Reclamation, the federal agency that manages the dam.
It's so expensive to do it because of where we live. A town our size couldn't do it on our own. We would have to have help. And so we're seeking that help, but that hasn't come yet.
Hill says the federal government should be on the hook for that help. The city of Page only exists because of the dam. It was set up in the late 50s as a place to house the workers that Reclamation hired to build it. Hill says that history means federal officials should bear some responsibility for making sure the city has adequate water supply. For its part, Reclamation says it's committed to working with the city of Page and offering assistance, but hasn't yet drawn up plans to distribute the $4 billion it received from the Inflation Reduction Act, which became law this summer. But the region's water supply problems don't stop at Page.
Climate change means that the flows of the Colorado River will continue to diminish.
Catherine Sorensen is the former director of the Phoenix Water Department. Now she researches water policy at Arizona State University.
And so for those communities that are dependent on Colorado River, they need to be looking around at their infrastructure, their alternative supplies, and developing means to be able to continue safe, reliable deliveries at the tap.
And around the region, it's not just climate change putting city water supplies at risk. Sorensen says infrastructure around the Southwest is getting old.
So I think you're going to see pressures from both sides. And I think that that might be really humbling for some of our communities.
And whether the money comes from federal coffers or increased water rates, Sorensen says small towns and big cities alike will need to react quickly to steel their systems against climate change. In Page, Arizona, I'm Alex Hager.
This story is part of ongoing coverage of the water in the West, produced by KUNC and supported by the Walton Family Foundation. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.